We've all heard this many, many times, correct? There is a time and a season. I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to minister it by the Spirit. And Father, I ask you to help me now to put my mind in the realm of the Spirit, that I may speak the words that are no longer intellectual, Father, but they are words of Spirit and they're words of life, that, Father, they may enter our spirits and, Father, produce the fruit that you desire them to. And that is your purpose, Father, that we prepare and bring forth much fruit to you. So, Father, in our spirit, may that come to pass today. Chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes, verse 1. To everything there is a season and a time and every purpose under a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up that which was planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rend and a time to sow. A time to keep silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. What profit has he that works in that which he labors? I have seen the travail which God has given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made all things or everything beautiful in his time. Also he has set the world in their heart so that no man can find out the work that God makes from the beginning to the end. I know that there is no good thing in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatsoever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God does it that men should fear before him. That which has been is now, and that which is to be has been already, or already been. And God requires that which is past. And moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that the wickedness that wickedness was there, and the place of righteousness that iniquity was there. Right? Two places, judgment and righteousness, and there was iniquity there. I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. And I said in my heart concerning the estate of the sons of men, that God might manifest them, and that they might see that they themselves are beasts. For that which befalls the sons of men befalls beasts. Even one thing befalls them. As the one dies, so dies the other. Yea, they have all one breath, so that a man has no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity. All go to one place. All are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. Who knows the spirit of man that goes upward, and the spirit of the beast that goes downward to the earth? Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion. For who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? Father, help us with this today. I know this has been used for hundreds of thousands of or millions of funeral processions, you know. They use these scriptures. But I don't think that's what God is trying to tell us. I think there's a whole lot more in this book than just trying to tell us about someone passing and it was God's will that someone would die. He says to everything or to all things, there's a season. Okay? And this word season, what would it mean to you? What would the word season mean to you in the context that's being used here? Okay. Literally it says it's a set or an appointed time. See, there's a set or an appointed time for everything. Just like there's a time for everything to live. If the thing that was appointed to live was appointed to live a year from now, and we brought it forth today, what would probably happen? It would die. See, it's not in God's time, is it? There's a time and a season for everything. If there's a time for something to die, and there's things in our lives that were appointed to die, I'm not talking about you as an individual. I'm saying things in your life, there's things that have been important in our lives, there's a time for them to do what? Die, to pass away. And you know, one time God spoke something in my life when I was at another fellowship before we branched out into our own fellowship, and God told me it was over. He spoke to me personally, He spoke to me at another time directly, and told me that He was going to destroy the other fellowship. And that fellowship had been raised to raise me and my wife. And I didn't want to hear that. Why? Why didn't I want to hear that? I was comfortable where I was at to a degree. Okay. And I was thinking with my natural mind that if God chooses to destroy this work, He's going to hurt a lot of people. True or false? And it did hurt a lot of people. But a lot of people hurt in that process. But see, it's not my choice, is it? God didn't say, Dave, if you would like me to, I'll do this. God told me what He was going to do. It was His time. It was His place. But I held on after God told me for 6 or 8 more months. And those 6 or 8 months was the most miserable time of my life. Physically and spiritually. It was miserable. Because God had already told me to leave. But I did not want to leave the people because I loved the people. See? I did not want to leave. And I said, I'll put up with anything. I'll stay here and defend these people. See? Guess what? It's not my place. I'm just supposed to do what I'm told. Not here to defend God or anybody else. I'm here to do what I'm told. Does that make sense? In our lives, we've got to get to that point. Just listen to what God says. If it's not God, don't pay any attention to it. But there's a time and a purpose for all what? There's a time and a to every purpose, it says. The word literally should say, and there's a season or a set appointed time and a set time to every or for all desires or pleasures. See, for every desire, there's a time for it. There's a time for every desire in your life. Right? There's a wrong time for them too. So in verse 2 he goes on, he says, there's a time to be born or to bear young. When the women reach the age of 60s and 70s, is that a time to bear young?
Absolutely not.
Is it a time to bear young when they're, amen. Is it a time when they're 10 and 12 years old to bear young?
Yeah.
No, they're still children, see. So the earth today is, in the eyes, we can see that it's all messed up. Because they've relied upon all the natural things that God says. It's just not right. Man has messed everything up. God's aware of it and He's utilizing everything that's going on. But it's not the way He set it up. Put it that way. There's a time to be born or to bear young, and there's a time to die. When we look at things in the natural, we say there's a time to die. But we want to put our time on it. You only die when you get old. Now that's what our minds tell us. And we think we're invincible when we're young. We think we can't, it's always somebody else, but somebody else has to be somebody. That someone who does die young is somebody. But everybody thinks it's somebody else. It will never happen to me that my house burns down. It will never happen to me that I'll have a car wreck. It'll never happen in my house that our grandson won't die. Never dream anything like that, would you? It's always somebody else. But you know what? Somebody has to be the somebody else. And it's not in our time, but whose time is it? It's in God's time for everything that comes down. Does it mean you won't feel pain because you understand it's God? No, sir. Pain is your friend. He'll teach you things. Pain will bring the change. Mike gave me something a long time ago, and I've never forgot it. Still got it in my office. It says, you will stay the same until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of the change. Did you get that? I've memorized it because it's true. I'll say it again. Somebody on the tape hears it, they can hear it again. You will stay the same until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of the change. Because change is painful. But sometimes staying the same is worse than the pain of change. Huh? Sure it does. So sometimes we need change. And he said there's a time for everything, didn't he? He says there's a time to kill and a time to heal. Yeah. You know that a priest was always killing things? You realize that? They're always killing. They're always sacrificing the beasts, weren't they? And there's a time in our life when we have to kill that beast. I'm not talking about drawing a knife and stabbing yourself. I'm talking about up here, the beast nature, the thinking process. And when I kill that thing, the only way I can kill it is with a big sword called the Word of God. Right through it. See? Them beasts that they brought in there for the priest to slaughter, them guys could cut some meat, I'm going to tell you. You talk about some meat cutters now, they could do it. They knew how to take one slice through the throat and they knew how to get everything that was vital to bring that thing to its knees instantly so they wouldn't have to wrestle it around, because they're killing millions of animals in a year's time. I mean, these people lined up. It's unbelievable what they're killing. Hundreds of thousands of animals are sacrificing. Don't you think they learned how to do it right? We have to learn how to do it right. And it's going to be by a process of slitting the throat of that sacrificial lamb in our lives that we give up, okay? The thing we desire the most, we have to give it up. But we're going to be practicing. We're going to be giving this one up, and then we're going to give that one up, and we're going to give that one up. And after a while, we're going to learn how to give them up, aren't we? God's not going to take them at one time, but we have to give them as an offering back to Him. We have to learn how to sacrifice. So a good priest is not afraid of blood, not afraid of using the knife, the Word of God. We have to learn how to use it the proper way. There's a time to heal. There's a time when we realize that we need to heal. And I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to quote what Watchman Nee said, because I think it was very true. And I'm not afraid to quote something that I know is right. He said, you can't heal somebody until you've healed yourself. You can't lead somebody where you've not walked. And you surely can't teach somebody something you've not learned. And we're not talking about intellectually here. We're talking experientially. We've experienced it. So that's what this is all about. We have to have a time to heal. Every bit of this is internal first. We've got to take this inside of us. If I can't learn to kill the nature of the beast that was within me, and then I can't come to the place of healing this thing inside of me that was hurt, guess what? Am I ever going to get there? I'll never get there. I'll just wallow in my self-pity all my life. I'll wallow in this beast nature all my life. There's a time to tear down and a time to build up. Even in our bodies, if we want to build big, strong bodies, what do we got to do to them first? You got to tear them down. As you work on weights and working out, you are tearing down muscle that it will become better, aren't you? Building it right back up. So we have to learn to break down and a time to build up. So we're going to be broke down first before we're built up, right? And God's going to do it, but we have to agree with Him in all these things in our heart. Then it comes together. There's a time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. Those things in our life represent different things. Weeping. What would you say it represents? Grief in our heart. Hard times we're going through. There's a time for this. Because each one of these things are teaching us something. The grief that we feel and we experience is what puts the mortar between the bricks. It makes the wall. It builds the house. Without that tempered mortar, the building is going to fall down. Got to experience it. Did Jesus experience it in His life? He stood over top of Jerusalem and said, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how many times I would have gathered you under my wings as a chick." He wept. He wept at Lazarus' death. He experienced all the emotions we experience. Necessary. If it wasn't necessary, He wouldn't have and we wouldn't. It's very necessary. A time to laugh. Does not the Scripture say laughter does good like a medicine? There's even experiences where people, it's been documented that man was sick with cancer and he got all the funniest movies he could and he began to watch movies day and night and comedians telling jokes and he just laughed and he laughed and he laughed and he laughed. I mean, he got the, because he had a lot of money, he could do anything he wanted to. But he hired people to make him laugh. He listened to movies. He did anything he could to make him laugh. Just hear jokes. And this man laughed and he laughed and he laughed. And they told him he was going to die. But he laughed himself into health. There's something that just secretes a type of a chemical out of your body when you laugh. Just like when you get excited, the adrenaline flows. There's things that will heal you in your body. And he began to laugh, and he believed what it said, and he brought himself out of the cancer, and he was not terminal, lived a long time. Okay. There's a time for laughter. It does good for us. In Psalms, it says, God sits in the heavens and does what? He laughs. See? Nothing wrong with laughter. There's a time for it. Not all the time. There's a time to mourn. There's nothing wrong with showing your emotions at a time of death in families and loss of major things in our life. There's nothing wrong with that mourning, but it's only for a season, isn't it? We can't stay in mourning for the rest of our lives. There's a time to realize it's over with. And there's a time to dance and rejoice. Right? And I think this next verse was written for the Jews. Time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones. Because they're good at throwing stones. And there's times for them to gather them up. Time to throw them away. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. There's times when we need close fellowship, and just like you spoke of earlier, Alice, there's a time when you feel distant. And it's okay, because that distance will show you that you have to stand on Father and His Word. You don't stand on our feelings or our emotions. It's about Father. And He's there, and He's never left. It's just, do I trust my mind that tells me how I feel, or do I trust my Father who told me He would never leave me? That's what it's about. He's teaching us a greater degree of faith. Great things. There's a time to get, literally to seek out or to search out, and there's a time to lose. And that means to give it up as lost. There's a time to search and there's a time to say, hey, I give up on this one. It's fruitless. It brings no fruit in my life. There's a time for that in our lives. We could chase things all of our life and come up to a place and say, really, you know what? I've invested my whole life in this thing and it's just not right. Time to give it up. The language, when it says lose, literally says to give it up is lost. There's a time to keep. That word keep's not correct. It should be. There's a time to guard and protect what we have. And there's a time to cast away, or literally to throw it away, because these things are no longer fruitful in our lives. Like we talked about Paul earlier, he said, when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I done childish things, but when I become a man, I got rid of them, I released them. And there's times in our life when we have these things that are necessary for us. A child needs a pacifier, don't they? They need these little toys, these little noisemakers. They need these little, what do they call those things that hang over their head?
Mobiles.
Mobiles. They need those little mobiles and their little security blankets and their little things. They need them. And it's okay, and we as mature sons of God need to learn that our brothers and sisters that are 60, 70, 80 years old still need them baby things, because they've never grown in spirit. And the only reason they didn't grow in spirit, because they never heard the truth of God. They only heard that man-made word, the doctrines that men have made and rules and regulations that they placed upon them. And if they hear the truth of God, they're at liberty to grow. See, they're not root-bound like a plant in a little tiny pot. They've been able to express themselves, they can grow. But when they've been put in those boundaries of the law, they've never been able to grow, so they're still little babies no matter how long they've been there. It doesn't make any difference. They have to have room to expand and grow, or they'll never grow. Where am I at? A time to rend, and literally that means to tear apart, and a time to sew, and literally should say sew together. There's time to tear it apart and time to put it back together. There's time when separation is good for us, but there's also a time to put it back together. There's a time to keep silence and a time to speak. And I know most people don't think I keep quiet very much. But a lot of people say that, you never shut up. But I'm serious. There are people that believe that I never stop talking. I'm going to tell you what, there's a lot of times I sit and listen and people don't pay attention that I'm listening. Because I can learn more from listening than I can from speaking.
I remember a time you kept quiet when we went to North Carolina on the way back.
I do a lot of times.
No, even driving.
Oh.
You grab him, Felipe.
No. I was the pilot then, so. But see, there's a lot of time you learn more from listening than you do from speaking. And that's part of maturity, learning to listen. It's not easy to do because the mind wants to run off with all the answers for everything. And part of that wisdom in being quiet is learning not to volunteer everything. Somebody can come and tell you their problems, and you might have a solution for it. But if they didn't ask for it, what are you doing? Aren't you meddling a little bit? Huh? Wouldn't it be meddling? If people didn't ask you for the solution, why should you volunteer it? Immaturity will always volunteer something that wasn't asked for. And that's the first thing that gets you in trouble. But if you sit back and wait for someone to ask for you to give your opinion, now you have a liberty to speak whatever you have to speak without offending people. See? But if you always volunteer what you think might be the best for their situation, all you're doing is creating havoc. And you make them feel like you're trying to control their life. So we need to just be quiet sometimes. And I have learned to be quiet, whether people believe it or not. There's lots of times I go very silent, and I listen, and I learn lots of things. And there's a time to speak, and at that time to speak is not the time to clam up, is it? There's a time when it needs to be said. And there's things in our lives sometimes that people need to say, and sometimes they're very offensive. I think Helen said this morning sometimes that I'm not afraid to say if someone comes to me with something, I say, no, that's wrong. Didn't you say that, Helen? And I said, and she said, and he's faithful to tell me if I'm wrong, he'll tell me that I'm wrong. And not because what Dave thinks, but because of God's word and what the truth is. And then she has to deal with it. And if I tell her, Helen, you're wrong, that don't mean I'm going to come back tomorrow and see if she did what I told her. It's just I showed her there was a problem here. Now you and God work it out. It's between you and him now.
I might not agree, but I take it and chew it.
That's it. And if you and God work it out, that's your business. Not me to come back and say, you still haven't straightened that thing up, have you? See, that's not my place, is it? It's between you and God. There's a time to love and a time to hate. What would you say about that?
Not hating someone.
It's learning to hate the things that are not of God. Okay, not people. We're not talking people here. We're talking about, and again, it's internal. What do I have to learn to hate? The things that I do in my life that are not of God. See? Now, we say all things are of God. Well, I'm talking about the negative things that don't need to be in my life. The things that are hindering me in my growth, in my relationship with God. Those are the things I have to learn to hate. There's a time for that. And there's a time for it to be in my life because God uses the negative in my life to show me and to correct me. Okay. Psalm 17, verse 13, David said, Lord, deliver me from the wicked, which is your sword. Our sword is the word of God. God's sword is the wickedness that's within us. And he can take my negativity and use it on me or you or somebody else if I have a negativity in me. We all do, don't we? So there's a time for all this. A time of war and a time of peace. We've all been at war, haven't we? In our heads? Haven't we all been at war? To different degrees, we've all been at war in our heads. And we've all come to a place of what? This word peace here is shalom. Okay, in the Hebrew, shalom. You've ever heard people say that? And they say peace. What it literally says is health, prosperity, and peace from war. That's what the language says. Health, prosperity, and peace from war. Shalom. They're wishing you health, prosperity, and a peace from war. See? Now, in the natural man, they think of shooting and bang-bang at each other and throwing bombs and rockets. But we're talking about peace in here from the war in our minds. See? If we realize the last Adam is dead, then there's nobody to fight with, is there? What are we fighting with? Come on. We're shadow boxing. Verse 9 says, what profit has he that works in that wherein he labors? What profit is there? Now, this is a man who's told us, how many times did I tell you in here the word was? 38 times he uses the word vanity, which means what? Something that's transitory and unsatisfying or unfulfilling. So he says, everything is vanity. He turns around and says, what profit is there in what man works at? In all the work that you labor, what profit is it? None. See? He's trying to show you something. In everything that I can labor in this world, what does it really come down to meaning? Nothing. Nothing. Does it mean don't do anything else? No. It's putting your priorities in order. What is the most important thing I can do? Now, is it more important for me to work for God and do what God tells me and be obedient for God, or is it to do all the worldly things? It's about working for God, isn't it? But now we come down to this, and this is the way people interpret this. That means on Sunday morning I have to go to church. Now, they do interpret it that way. That is not what it says. If you were on your way to church today and someone's house caught on fire or someone had a wreck or someone was having a heart attack and you're there, you're a qualified medical personnel. What would your point to be? I'm going to be late for church or stop and save this man's life? See? We have to put our priorities right. God's not going to be mad at you because you helped save someone's life. But there's people here that believe here is where it's at. Come to the building. There was a song that was called In the Shadow of the Steeple when God first began to deal in my life. There was a group called the Singing Americans. And they was over in Portsmouth. And they sang the song. And that's when God, first time, I mean, rattled my cage talking to me. I was sitting in a room with over 500 or 1,000 people, and they all left. They were there, but they left. And I was the only one in there. And I was hearing that group sing. And they were singing In the Shadow of the Steeple, and God spoke to me. I mean, it scared the living bejeebers out of me. I mean, I was shook because I heard God speak. And I looked around. There's nobody in the room but me, and I know there was people all around me. But they weren't there. I couldn't see them. All I could see was these men singing this song, and God was speaking to me. And them men didn't know what they were doing, but God was speaking out of that song to me. And it told the story of a man who came to the church, and all he was looking for was some help. And the pastor came by and said, I don't have time for you. I've got to get my sermon ready for the morning, you know, because I was out running late last night, and I didn't have time to get it ready last night, so I'll get it real quick this morning. See? He wasn't prepared. And then along comes some of the elders. Hey, we've got some things to do for Sunday school this morning, and we've got to get things prepared and get the brass polished and everything for the buckets and everything we're going to pass and the silver. And then the next guy comes along, and he said, hey, I've got to get ready for my class. I've got to teach the kids about how to draw snakes and apples in the tree, you know. I got things to do. And it says they went inside and they had the service. They left this gentleman standing outside. And when it was almost over, it said they were collecting the money to send their money to the missionaries all overseas. And it said while they were doing this, this man took the cold blue steel and placed it on the spot where the shadow of the steeple touched his forehead. And he committed suicide because the church had no time for the man that needed life. That's what we're missing. We're walking over top of bodies to try to go somewhere over there to help somebody, and we can't even help ourselves right here. And when God showed me that, he spoke into my life that this valley would be where I'm at. He said, I would travel out, but this is where I'll be. I'm not going somewhere else. God said, this is the valley. It's a big valley. It goes a long way. We were still in this valley in Minnesota. That valley just went down, curved up that way. It's a big valley. See? But we got to realize this is what it's about. It's about people. It's not about a building. It's not about money. It's not about things. It's about people's lives. And nobody wants to see that. Now, that sounds good, brother, but we've got a building to build. We've got things to do. See, somebody missed it. And you know what? My life's never been the same, and I'm glad. I'm glad it's never been the same. It hasn't been easy, but it's never been the same. Verse 10. I have seen the what? That word means task or job, which God has given to the sons of Adam to be, and the word is not exercised, to be afflicted, busied, or occupied with. I've seen that. This is the man who realized God gave us something to do, and it's to afflict us, to keep us busy, and to occupy us. And you know what some people have done? They have learned that's what they can do. They can occupy themselves and they ain't got time for God. And that's what the church is doing. Everybody does it in some form. When God begins to deal with them, I've known many men and women, as soon as God begins to deal with them, they got to do something. I know just one particular individual, every time God would deal with them, they go build something. They build. And as long as they're busy building, they say, hey, I got to get this done. What's more important? When I was in Minnesota, the lady, Joe, her and her husband, where we stayed, Joe was a worker. Phipp was a worker. And I mean, she labored before we got there tremendously for weeks, getting everything prepared to be just right. They wanted everything to be perfect for us. And she came in and she labored cooking, just keeping food out all the time while all these meetings were going on, day and night. And I said, Martha, 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 you worry and fret so much. Get me a bologna sandwich or a peanut butter sandwich and come and set it at the feet of God and listen to the Word of God. You don't have to do that. And she heard me. And she come and sat down. I said, hey, we don't have to be impressed by all the food. We'll eat whatever you throw out here. Don't waste your time. Hear this. We've got something for you. Come and get it. Let me feed you for a change. You've labored to feed everybody. Let me feed you now. That's the more important thing. And when Jesus said that to Martha, because Martha had complained. Now, Joe hadn't complained, but she was a worker. And she complained. Martha complained because Mary was sitting at the feet of Jesus listening to the Word. And he says, Martha, Martha, you fret and worry so much. Mary has chosen the better, and it will not be taken away from her. What was he telling her? Shut up. Shut up. Now, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was telling her, shut up. Come on. She's here in life, and you're interested in all this vanity. It's not going to be taken away from her just because you're murmuring and complaining. This woman's found the life, and I'm going to let her have it. And if you want it, you'll sit down with her. We'll get something to eat later. Don't worry about it. Okay? I know I'm not smooth about everything. I'm just telling you what I hear. Okay? He has made what? All. The word every is all. All beautiful in whose time?
His time.
Wasn't ours, was it? It's all in His time. Also, He has set what? The world in their heart. Who put it there? Well, how can we get upset with them? Come on. How can we get upset with them? So that no Adam man can find out the work that Elohim, or God, makes from the beginning to the end. Guess what? They can't find. No Adam man can do this. Nobody in the natural can figure this out. This is not an intellectual thing that we're doing. It's spiritual. There's a difference. Do you realize that? If it was about intellectual, then there's a few smart people and the rest of us would be all destined for hell like they think. Right? Even, they say, even Einstein only used 2% of his capacity, of his mind. And everybody thinks he was so wise, so intelligent. Well, that means some of us probably haven't got 1% we've used. So what? I don't care about my intellect. I want my spirit to abound in all of God's wisdom and knowledge. That's all I'm concerned with. Don't care about their natural things. Okay? And He doesn't want us. Why did He put it in here? Why did He put the world in the heart of Adam? So that we couldn't understand everything from the beginning to the end, right? He don't want us to understand it all at one time. It needs to be revealed. It's just like we sit down to a big feast at the table and we see all this great food and the table's 40 feet long. But you know what? We can't put all that food in at one time. Proverbs says, if you found honey, eat your fill, but don't eat too much. At least you vomit up the good words you found. And if God would release all the wisdom that He has, we would just lose everything. We couldn't contain it. We couldn't put it into our lives. We couldn't take it in and digest it and let the nutrients of that Word change our heart. It'd be explosion so great we couldn't handle. It would kill us. Okay? Verse 12. I know that there is no good in them, but, literally it should say this, I know there is no good in them except they rejoice and do good in your life. Except you rejoice, rejoice and do good in your life. There's nothing else that you can do. Just rejoice. God has given you life. He's given you health. Why shouldn't you rejoice? Wah! My car's old. Wah! Wah! We hear it all the time. What's the big deal? You know, there's people that don't have cars, that never seen a car, will never use a car in their life. Did they live? Probably those people are happier than most of the people in the United States. It's got 4 cars or 5 cars or 10 cars. What does that change anything? See? Everybody wants something, and it's not about wants. It's about let's grow. Let's change what we're thinking in here to God's Word. Just rejoice in where God has chosen you. Because you didn't choose it anyway, did you? We think we do sometimes, but God made the choice. And also that every Adam man again should eat and drink and enjoy. The word enjoy literally should say they should see and consider the good. So it's that, and also that every man should eat and drink and see, or literally consider, the good of all his labor. It is the what? It's the gift of God he's given us. See, we should see and enjoy what we have, but that's not the problem. The problem is we see it and see it as what we've done. We don't see it's a gift from God, do we? We say, look what I've done. Look what I've built. Look what I've amassed. Look how great I am. Does that sound like seeing it's a gift of God? It's what we've done. Well, I'm sorry. It's not about what we've done. It's about what he's done. And it's about him giving us the gift of all this stuff in our lives. And you know, most of us aren't as thankful as we should be. We're not as thankful as we should be. This family right next door just lost everything they had. And you know, they're still not thankful. They've talked a little bit about God, but now that the insurance company's coming through, it's cool now. They've got some things back and everything's cool now, so they don't need God now. But they needed God at the time. And they even, the night of the fire, they even gave reverence to me and honor to me as a man of God, which they've never done. As we walked over, they started to say some words that were not very nice. And they said, oh, I'm sorry, you're a Christian. I didn't want to say anything like that in front of you. And all of them just watched their language because we walked over there. And the other time, they're cussing us. Come on. See, but at that time, they're looking for help from God in a moment of crisis. That's not God. So you need God every day of your life. What was the song we sang? I need you more today than yesterday. So today, I need you today. The people like that don't understand. And I understand they don't. And I told them, don't worry about me. I'm just a man. God's the one you have to worry about, not me. I don't worry about nothing. Okay? Where am I at? I know that whatsoever God does, it shall be for what? Forever. Literally, olam. whatever God does, it exists forever, literally. Or in age beyond time. Nothing can be put to it, nor can anything be taken from it. Well, then what in the world do we think we're going to change? What did he just say there? Nothing can be added to it. Nothing can be taken away. And yet, they still stand in the pulpit and preach to you every week. You can change what God's doing. If you'll just pray hard enough, if you'll cry and slobber and beg God enough, he'll give in. And see, that's exactly what we teach our children. Because we haven't got the guts to stand up to them and say no when we mean no. And that's what the churches do. And they've trained the people to do the same thing. And why do you think our generations are so screwed up? Because no one has a consistency and a strength of God in their life to say what they mean and stay with it. And the churches do the same thing. If you'll badger God enough, he'll give you what you want. I'm sorry. I don't believe that. And this book doesn't back it up the way they say it, does it? God does what he wants. His purposes and plans will prevail. Right? Okay. And God does what? In order that men should what? Should fear, literally should be in awe of, in His presence. They should be in awe in His presence. He does this. He sets this up, okay? He goes back and says, whatsoever God does, it shall exist forever. Nothing can be put to it or taken away from it. And God does it in order that men should be in respect or in awe of Him in their presence. Whenever God's in our presence, we should be in awe of God. When should that be? If He's living in us, when should it be? We should always be in awe of God. I'm amazed at the things He says and does all the time. It's just constant. See, it's not just a Sunday morning, Thursday afternoon thing. It's all the time. God is all the time. And it's just not about these few minutes of the time we get to spend together. Okay, verse 16. And moreover, is that it? No, 15. That which has been, or that which exists now, we should say, that which exists now and that which exists to be has already been. It just is. And God requires or searches out that which is past. See? Searches out that which is past. There's another scripture that goes with it, Proverbs 25:2. It's the glory of God to conceal the matter, and it's the honor of kings to search out the thing. See? God concealed it, and it's the honor of the God in, it's the God in us that receives glory from searching out the, what God has hidden in His Word. God has already got all the glory He needs, doesn't He? But He's giving glory to us when we search out the things He's buried in this Word for us. And moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, or the place of justice. See, King James always wants to make it judgment. That means punishment. Is justice punishment? Justice can be a reward. See? We get the wrong context out of this word judgment. It should be justice if you look at the language. He said the place of justice. And wickedness was there. Hello, we're not talking about a courthouse. We're not talking about a king sitting on a throne. We're talking right between your running lights. Right here. This is the place of justice. And there's wickedness there. It's called the mind of humanity. And didn't Ezekiel say the heart of man is desperately wicked? That's all he's revealing. That my own thinking process I cannot trust. I go back to my level, my square, and my plumb line. And that's the Word of God. Jeremiah 17:9. I'm sorry. Thank you very much. It's not Ezekiel. It's Jeremiah 17:9. Okay. Place of judgment, that wickedness was there. And the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there. See? Isn't this the righteous place? Aren't we the holy habitation of God? And in this holy habitation, there's wickedness. See? I can deal with that. I can deal with that. But I got to realize that there is wickedness. Lois and I sat one night and ministered to a lady years ago. And we sat up almost most of the night. And that woman screamed and she hollered, I've never done anything wrong in my entire life. I have never sinned. Excuse me? By the time the night was over, she said, you know what, I'll think about this. She started softening. And the next day she called us and said, you're right, I have sinned. Thank you very much. Well, she come a long ways. From screaming and beating on the table that she had never sinned in her life. She said, I think you're right, I have. Well, there's a revelation. She finally saw that there was something wrong with her thinking. Now, where she's at today, I don't have a clue. Yeah, huh?
Thank God for the just
sure,
reward.
It's a just reward. I only get what I'm, I don't even get what I should have got. Thank God for it. Where she's at now, at least she come that far, and we've never seen her since. I don't know where she's at now, but that's okay. It'll come to pass. Verse 17. I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous, or the just, should be just, and the wicked, because there is a time for every desire and for every action. There's a time for it, for every desire and for every action that takes place. Now see, this is a person speaking in their heart, saying, hey, I'm not the judge, come on. Did anybody die and make us God and set us in His throne? God's not dead. This is about realizing that the God that dwells within you is your judge. And He will... And you change it or else. That's the law. That's the do's and the don't do's, and that's called the do-do in the temple. We don't need, do we? Okay? So, verse 18 says, I said in my heart concerning the estate of the sons of Adam, that God might manifest, and the word manifest literally is test them, not manifest them, but test them, that they might see that they themselves are literally dumb beasts. God said all these tests are to show you something. Until God is manifested in your life, you will act just like a beast. If you are attacked, you will retaliate. If you're threatened, you will try to hurt back. You will lash back. It's that serpent beast nature that's within us. And God's testing you to show you that that beast is resident in you. I go someplace else and show you who created that thing. We don't need to get there right now. We created that in ourselves. I'll say that much. I can show it later. I don't get off on that tangent and be somewhere for an hour. I'm just showing you that that beast nature is in you. And the purpose of this life is to test you and show you. Don't tell me that you're holy and righteous and you never sinned in your life. There's a beast nature within each one of us that needs to be dealt with. And I've not got to be the one to put the sword to it. God is. All I have to agree is with Him, you're right, Father, there's a beast nature in me. You put it there, you deal with it. He has, but we have to agree with it.
Okay, what did you say manifest
means? Manifest means to test. The language says test. That God might test them, and in a test it shows you how much you know, not how much you don't know. That's a negative way to look at it. Show you how stupid you are. No, it's trying to show you how much you've learned. That's what a test is about. Because they always teach you and then they test you, don't they? They have to show you how much you've learned. And because that which befalls the sons of Adam befalls beasts. Even one thing befalls them. As the one dies, so dies the other. Yea, they have all one breath, so that Adam has no preeminence or superiority above a beast, because all is transitory and unsatisfactory. It's not fulfilling, is it? That's the truth. And this man saw it. This man Solomon, if you think that this is just about the man called Solomon, the same son of David who was a king in Israel and was the preacher, you're kidding yourself. Because this is Bob, and this is Ed, and this is Mike, this is Paul. And all the women too. this is the same thing. Your name should be right in here. And it's got to be a place in your life when you agree and say the same things about yourself that Solomon said. Solomon was only revealing how the life of God really is. That you walk through it, you experience all these things to find out that they don't mean squat. You're here for one reason, for God's purpose. It's all about God in your life. All this other stuff is to show you the beast nature in you. And we want to go to church and say, oh, I'm saved, and I would never do anything wrong. And then someone comes along and just steps on your toe a little bit, and the snake nature comes out, and you bit them and poisoned them. See? That serpent raises up in you, and you bite people. You see people pull out of church, and they go out, and somebody pulls out in front of them, and they flip them off. You're supposed to be a God man. What are you doing flipping somebody off? What are you cussing at them for? You're the God man. Right? Someone cuts you off, so you go up and cut them off and run them in a ditch. That's what you deserve. Well, come on, that's not God. Just let them go. The book says that the sinner is heaping it up for the righteous. Let them go. Let them go to the line first. Let them get their food. They need their energy to work for us, to heap up that stuff for us, see? Let them go. Don't get mad at them. If you let them make you mad, they are controlling your life.
That's exactly right.
They're controlling your life. I refuse to let anyone make me mad. I refuse it. See? I can get mad if I want to, can't I? I don't want to. Because then they're telling me, get mad. And I jump up just like an idiot and do it. Don't I?
Yeah.
And if you go back and ask the person that got mad, do you want this person over here that made you mad to tell you how to live? Absolutely not. Well, they just did, didn't they? They told you, get mad and act like an idiot. And you go, okay, I'll do it. Hey, we do those things. We don't even think. Huh? Yeah, we're performing beasts. See? Trained seals jumping through a hoop. Don't let people do this to you. Let God run your life. Don't let other people run your life. Because all they do is take away the peace of God out of your life. They take away a piece. We don't want that. Okay, where am I at? 20? All go to one place. All are of the dust. Everything that was created came out of the what? That's the natural realm. And all do what? Turn to dust again. Or all return to the dust again. Ecclesiastes 12 will say that again and bring it out very well. The dust returns to the earth from where it came, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Who knows the spirit of the sons of Adam that goes upward, and the spirit of the beast that goes downward to the earth? Just what I quoted, Ecclesiastes 12:7. The dust returns to the earth from where it came, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Didn't say just certain spirits, did it? It's all spirits. Wherefore, I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man or an Adam man should rejoice in his works, because that is his portion. What does that mean? He should rejoice in his own works, what he has gained from his works, the money, what position you've attained in life. You should enjoy this. Now, today, everybody thinks, well, you know, there's people that die hoarding money. I know a lot of people doing it. They're dying right now. They're old people. They're dying. And they're sitting on money that could do so many things for their children or their grandchildren. And they see their children struggling and really need a financial hand to get them over hump. I would much rather myself, if I had a bunch of money and I see my children, I said, well, this is your inheritance. I'm doing you a favor. I'm holding on to it. And in the process, your children are at a point of death, need medical attention, and have no insurance, and can't go anyplace and get it. They just don't want to go in debt and lose everything they've got. And a man sitting with $250,000 in a suitcase beside his couch said, well, when I die, I'm going to get some of that. I got a whole lot more. That's just I keep that around for handy stuff I need. Okay. What kind of an attitude is that? The best thing I could do is give it to my children and see them prosper. I don't mean waste it, but give it to them in with judgment. And I mean, with good discernment, and help them when they're in need. See, not torment them with it, but to give it to them to help them. No. No, don't expect it back. This book says here that a man should lay up for his children's children. And I heard that. And I began laying money up years ago for our grandchildren. Our children's children is our grandchildren. And our grandchildren have more money than we have. And I never fail every month to give them more. Our grandchildren got more money than I have. I don't care. God told me to do it. See, I heard it. I'm giving it to them. And when my grandchildren come to an age someday, they're going to be able to have something. Maybe when they decide to go to college, they can have a new car or something so they can not have to worry about transportation while they're at college. Or they might get married and have a down payment on their home or something. See? I may not even be here. But God told me to lay up for my children's children. And that's exactly what I'm doing. He said, that's our portion. And see, if I can take this money that I know that I've got and I can give it to my grandchildren, whether I see it or not, I know that's what I'm supposed to do. That's my portion. I'm going to enjoy that because I know one of these days the grandkids, even the ones I don't get to see that are being kept away from me, there's an account for them. And someday they're going to know, Grandma and Grandpa really did care for me. They put away money for me all their lives that I would have something. And I don't care what they've been taught right now. That Grandpa's an old bad guy. It's okay. Because someday they're going to see that I just didn't say I loved them. I provided for them. And see, that's what God does for us. He provides for us. He don't just tell us. He tells us and provides. And that's what we're going to do. And that's our portion. Because who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? I don't know what's going to be after. Do you? I don't know. But all I know is God said that's what we should do. Oh, there's a whole lot in this book. It's a beautiful, beautiful chapter. And I thank God you're patient with me today. I know it's running late. The lines might be long at restaurants, but you know what? It's okay.